Cheers Cast is part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Yeah, Carl's got himself a real poindexter there, huh? Hey, it's sad to say that kids who aren't accepted by their peers really never learn how to get along with people in the big grown-up world.
Why is that, Cliff? Because they keep boring everyone and driving them crazy with long speeches filled with meaningless statistics?
Yep. Yeah, 63% of them live lives of quiet desperation.
And how about those who sit next to them?
You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to Cheers Cast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and with me this time is fellow Fire and Water Network All-Star, who now hosts Siskoid Cinema among his many other projects. Please welcome back Siskoid. What's up?
What is up? What is up is that I am on Cheers Cast. I like to do that once a year if I can. Not that I'm pushing for it, but you're always so kind to invite me on.
Of course. I love talking.
You're one of the people who knows my. One of the people who knows my name.
I do. Yeah. Well, good to have you back. Always pleasure. And folks, we are talking about now. Remember, I've had to explain this a couple of times now, but we are on episode 14 of season 7, which is the episode titled "I Kid You Not." If you have been watching on the streaming services or on the digital version, you probably saw this one an episode ago because they have these two out of order. But I kid you not, should be episode 14 because in the last episode we met Woody's new girlfriend Kelly, who comes back in this episode. And if you weren't paying attention, you might have gotten to this episode in the slot for episode 13 and been like, who is this new girl that Woody is dating? I haven't met her yet. And 95% of the time, the order of episodes in a given season does not matter for Cheers. You've got, like, the season premiere, the season finale, which may or may not be a two-parter. You might have a holiday episode in between, but, like, there's 20 episodes in the middle that you can shuffle the order, and it rarely matters. But this is one of those times where it's like, you shouldn't have screwed this one up.
It's odd. I wonder, is it like a production thing? Is it
Blaine Dollar is the one who brought this to my attention like months ago, even before I started recording the season. And I think he posited that it might have been just as something as simple as a data entry error, because the last episode was originally broadcast on February 9th, and he thinks maybe they entered it as February 19th, and something like that might have pushed it back after this episode. But who knows? I honestly have no idea what the problem is.
Okay.
Yeah, that's as good a reason as I can come up with, so. Season 7, Episode 14, I Kid You Not, written by Rick Barron and Rod Burton, directed by James Burrows, and the original air date for this one was Thursday, February 16th, 1989. Carla's 6-year-old son, Ludlow, the child she bore to Fraser's mentor, Dr. Bennett Ludlow, is the lone white sheep of her children, a curious and creative intellectual who, unlike Carla's other children, doesn't have a criminal record yet. Lud comes to Cheers after playing a disastrous baseball game, but his interest is piqued when Fraser and Lilith mention going to an opera. They ask Carla if they can take Lud with them, as it will serve as both cultural enrichment for the child and an opportunity to gauge their effectiveness as parents, which they've been contemplating. Lud and the Cranes have a great time, and after the opera, they want to take him to the movies and have him spend the night with them. For a week, they spend every chance they can get with little Lud, which means Carla isn't getting any time with her favorite son. Seeing how much it's hurting Carla, Sam suggests they invite Carla along when they want to take Lud to a posh French restaurant. At dinner, Fraser orders bouillabaisse for everyone, but Lud won't even try it, not liking fish. At Fraser's insistence and Carla's encouragement, Lud tries a tiny sip and shouts that he hates it. When Fraser demands the boy eat it, Lud crawls under the table. Fraser stops Carla from getting him out, insisting that he knows how to deal with stubborn children better than she. That is, until Lud lights Fraser's shoes on fire and Fraser makes a bigger scene. Before they're all kicked out, the Cranes plead with Carla to take Lud home. In the aftermath, Frasier feels like a failure as a parental candidate and resigns to never have children of his own. Then Lilith says she's pregnant, and Frasier is overjoyed with excitement. All right, Cisco, what did you think about this episode?
I think it's a good presentation of why a Frasier sitcom would work.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Frasier episode Inside Cheers. We've had a few of these.
Yeah.
But this one really centers on his particular neuroses, like working things out with his own family, which, of course, will become part of his own sitcom later. So I felt like this was a very at home with the Cranes, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Yeah. And I did have some, I don't know, flashbacks, PTSD from it, because I kind of was this sort of kid,
mm-hmm.
but more importantly, my dad was kind of a Frasier as presented here. So.
Knowing a little bit about you and your relationship with your dad, after I asked you to do this one, I was like, I hope this doesn't trigger something. But I was also like,
no.
Frasier, I was like, Siskoid is, you know, I give you more credit than that.
I've resolved my daddy issues a long time ago.
Okay?
But it is like it was. We did go to fancy restaurants, and we were told how to eat and what to eat. And you couldn't just try a thing and not like it. You had to like it. It was kind of like this. No opera, no ballets, or you know, like nothing like that. But the feeling is similar. with maybe the Carla, the mom, being closer to what my mom might have been, even though she wouldn't have been invited to those same dinners.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, kind of taking this as one of their test pilots for a Frasier spinoff, which as you're right, they do a number of these throughout this. Like, it's nice that they show Frasier in all his glory, but they're also not afraid to show he's a jackass. He's as much of a fool as anybody in the cast, and he walks himself right. His pretentiousness at times, and just his so certainty that he is above everyone else, walks him right into this trap of like he demeans Carla at the same time, and then he's like begging her by the end of it to take care of it and help him out of this jam.
Yeah, and we want him to be hoisted on his own petard, right? He's that character. He's a fool dressed up as a king, and you know he's going to be shown up as what he is. But yeah, so it's interesting to see him like that, but also when you take the full context of the character, you know, like he doesn't have a good relationship with his dad, as we'll find out. In the show itself, he said his dad was dead,
right?
You know, in Cheers. So when we see that, like, he's got a blue-collar dad and who had these two sons who are these, you know, these snobs, I guess.
Yeah, nothing about this makes sense in the continuity of the show.
No, well, he's got his own daddy issues, right? He's got mommy issues, according to the previous episode, where where sexual fantasies are, you know, playing baby. And then he's got daddy issues, because he's denied his own father when we eventually meet him. He's totally dissimilar to them, to him and his brother Niles. So it makes sense that he would have problems with, and as we'll discuss, the whole pregnancy thing. My question, once we got to the end, was, you know, did she know she was pregnant all along? She's not pregnant in that last, I mean, how long were they babysitting, you know? So she already knew she was pregnant. And when she has like another agenda, when she talks to Carla and says, well, we've been discussing it, so this might help Frasier and I decide. No. What's really happening is this might help Frasier ease into the idea of becoming a father, because she knows he has daddy issues.
Right.
You know, she knows him. She's his psychiatrist, basically. So she knows all his problems and that he's not going to want to be a father. So like he's connected to this kid. Perfect. Let's make him a surrogate son. And that's going to, you know, make it easier when I tell him I'm pregnant. He'll have gotten used to the idea, except it all goes wrong, right?
Yeah, and we'll get into that as we go, like, into the actual, like, details of the episode. But, like, she brings it up, like the question of should they reproduce or something like that is a question she brings up. But we never know the details of it until at the very end when Fraser and Lilith are alone, and he said, "My instincts were right. We shouldn't have children." So it's clearly, like, within the discussion, maybe she was thinking, like, yeah, this is something we should do, and he was the one who was backing off. So, yeah, maybe this whole thing of getting attached to love, maybe this was her play all along, as you said, kind of ease him into it, get him used to, just like the requirements, the actions of a parent without the stress or the responsibility of it yet, and that will come along. So, diving into the episode proper for our teaser, and again, this is one of the crucial parts of the continuity. Woody is going out on a date with Kelly that we met last episode, and he's taking her to a country club dance, of which I was kind of thinking, I was like, okay, I know that Kelly is young, but, like, how old is she? Like, I guess, I think she's in college at this point or something like that. But a country club dance still sounded very, like, junior high prom to me. I don't know what it was. It's just
it's probably more like, you know, it's like all those debutante balls and stuff.
Yeah,
rich people go to dances.
I'm sure that's what it was. But just like the way he phrased it or something, I was like, okay.
Because it's Woody, it sounds like a country club. Obviously, means it's for, you know, well-to-do people,
right,
and so on. And my dad was a member of a country club when he still lives down in Texas, I guess. Yeah. But when I went down to Texas in summers, like, there was like a country club for the well-to-do in this like 3,000 people community, right?
Yeah.
They still had one. That's where you had like the pool and you had to be a member. And I'm sure there were, you know, racist limits on it or whatever. But the idea is that's where you connect with people. And, you know, it's like probably an outgrowth of the clubs in Britain.
Yeah.
Where they go and play cards in London and it's all the aristocrats and people who are important or leaders of industry. So
where the Justice Society would meet.
Right, the Justice Society. But the name is Country Club.
Right.
In the States, which makes it sound like it's out in the country. It probably is you know, you've got a golf course.
Yeah, you always had golf courses, things like that.
But with Woody, he is from the country.
Yeah.
So when he says it, it's like, I'm going to the country. It's like a barn dance.
Yeah.
That's how he makes it sound because he's Woody. Yeah. But if this were Fraser or Lilith speaking, you know, you would get the idea that this is, they would not call it a dance.
Yeah.
They would call it a ball. And then suddenly, okay, now it's a different context.
So Woody, he's going to take her to this dance. And he needs to look at the bus schedule. And they're like, oh, the bus. He's like, yeah, relying on bus for transportation is getting to be a drag, especially when they can't sit together. So he thinks of borrowing Sam's car. And the guys warn him, you know, that's one of the Ten Commandments of Sam. They're like, thou shalt not loan thy car. And then Woody goes down to the hallway to ask Sam. And Sam just starts laughing and laughing. And he, like, can't even get a word in response, just laughing and laughing. And when he comes back to the guys, like, well, how did that go? He's like, he didn't come right out and say it, but I like my chances because he's in a great mood today. And we go back to Dan, who just falls down laughing. So,
yeah, and we're going to – I mean, he's right. He's going to get those keys eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he doesn't really know what's happening. I think it's all going it's all in Sam's head all the way through, you know, like we'll get to that moment, but it's a good one.
After the teaser, after the credits, the guys tell Woody that if he does get Sam's car, it's like an instant aphrodisiac because any woman who rides in that car goes to bed with Sam. Rebecca overhears this and mentions that she has ridden in the car, and they're like, yeah, exactly. And she protests. She's like, I didn't go to bed with Sam. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, notice how she always denies it afterwards. And she gets fed up with them. She's like, I hate you people. And she walks into her office. And Cliffy's like, yeah, you notice how they always adopt that anti-male attitude.
This is really true to the era,
mm-hmm.
I feel. You know, like this kind of teasing of a female colleague. Well, not just female colleagues, everybody, you know.
Yeah.
My own group in the 90s was like the worst of the worst. You didn't want to get close to that that group that was always like working on a pecking order. And then like, who do you mock? Who's the punching bag this time? this is her time, right? This episode. I love how it resolves this little C plot, but Backseat Becky gets a lot of crap from the Cheers gang over the years.
Yeah. Carla asks if she can duck out for a bit to catch the end of her son's t-ball game, and this is where we kind of get a description of Ludlow as the intellectual, and Sam's like, I didn't know he liked baseball, and Carla says she used the old going to the library but running out of gas in front of the ballpark routine. And again, somewhat stereotypical for the era. You know, it's not good enough that her son is actually an intellectual who can probably, I'm sure he can read at a level well advanced for his age, and he's into all of these other things. But for Carla, grew up, we would say, like, on the streets or something like that, and as hard as her family is, and with their reputation and everything like that, part of her loves this kid, but she's also, she says as much, she doesn't want him to be soft and doughy, the kind of wimp who wears Argyle sweaters and smokes a pipe. Now, a little bit of visual irony, as she is saying this, she is describing Frasier perfectly, who walks around behind her, because he's wearing a sweater and smoking a pipe.
Right, and he's going to be the surrogate father in this, you know, like want to, like, through the association with Bennett Ludlow. Mm-hmm. And how weird is this, though, that the kid is called Ludlow and that's his father's family name?
Yeah, it is weird. Yeah.
Like, I'm sure he's got, like, his mother's family name, you know, like, right. They didn't get married, so the kid
would be Ludlow Tortelli,
mother's name.
But.
Yeah. Right, but. Well, Tortelli isn't even her own maiden name or anything, but I mean, so his actual name is Ludlow.
Yeah, which, yeah. If she put his dad's name on the, yeah, weird. So I didn't
very
even think
weird.
About it, yeah. And anyway, Frasier,
like if it's like he's not named after his father in the normal sense, right? He's not called Bennett. If it was Ludlow Bennett instead of Bennett Ludlow, then okay, but.
And anyway, Frasier has to explain a little bit of this to Lilith, that Carla bore a son to Bennett Ludlow, the eminent psychologist who was Frasier's mentor, which is a nice bit of continuity because this refers back to the season 3 episode Who Done It, in which case Carla got pregnant again, this time because the actress Rhea Perlman was pregnant, and it was a man who was the complete opposite of Nick Tortelli, the father of her 4 previous children, I think of that, or 5 at that point. And Lilith is like, I can't believe that, like, Bennett Ludlow had a child with Carla. She's like, this is going to be great dish or gossip for the girls in the sleep disorder lab. So, and they're like, well, you know, you must be very proud of that. But she's like, no, because, you know, Ludlow, Bennett Ludlow, the senior, is never around. This was, you know, by choice. He did offer to marry and take care of Carla and her children, but she was like, no, she didn't want to marry another guy who she didn't love. But she did insist that he would pay child support. So Carla, you know, tells Frasier that, you know, a good father is someone who is there to tuck them in, to help with their homework, there with a bottle of Bactine, not when they get a scraper scar, but when they give themselves a bad tattoo.
Right. She knows her family, you know.
Yeah.
Aside, you said something like, you know, Ludlow was the only one without a criminal record as yet. But to be fair, she does say here that none of those charges ever stood up on appeal.
Yes.
So none of the kids have a criminal record.
Right. I love that. That's a great way of phrasing it. They're good kids. Not one has had a conviction that stood up on appeal.
Yeah, but it's fun because, like, this is an episode where, you know, like, normally Carla is very down on her kids. They're monsters in a lot of her jokes. But
yeah.
This is one where she defends them. Not just Ludlow, but all of them.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. Like, this is a good episode for Carla being, despite what Frasier thinks, a good mom.
Yeah, yeah.
A good mom under those crazy circumstances. You know, 8 kids raised alone, mm-hmm. you know, et cetera, on a waitress's salary, as she says. I mean, you know, it's a rough time.
Right.
But we do see her here as a good mother. At least that's the feeling I get, no matter what the jokes are.
Right,
know?
Right.
It's similar to Norm is probably a better husband than what he lets on.
Yes, I agree. I agree.
It's just part of their
yeah.
jokes.
Yeah. And she actually, she says as much. She gives a little bit more feel to that a little bit later in the episode. But
yeah.
at this point, Ludd shows up. The game ended early. So, and, you know, he mentioned that obviously he not being the athlete, he sat on the bench for most of the game. but they finally put him in the game after the kid with the casts on his legs and the two fat girls went home, a line I don't think they would have said if the show was made today.
Well, maybe not, but, you know, been there. Yeah. Being last pick.
Yes.
Last pick behind the person that you thought was would have been last pick. You think you're before last pick, but no. Like, I was not. Like, this was probably the most relatable bit about Ludlow as a child to me. You're forced to play baseball, or it's just t-ball in this case, but you're forced to play baseball, but you're just useless at it, and the kids pick on you, but then if you don't play, they pick on you, and there's no getting out of it. We're gonna hear soon that he's six, right? And you said this is season seven. She was pregnant with him in season three, so time is moving.
That's
there are
right.
more years. Well, sometimes, you know, there's like gaps. You can tell you're watching season, and someone's a month later. Time is moving faster for them than for us, so that he can be. I don't know how old Frederick's going to be, but it's like how quickly, you know, kids in sitcoms grow up so fast at the beginning.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
But I think there's like more years. There's more than 7 years since the start of the series.
Yeah. The kids age up, because now I'm thinking by the last season we see the twins that Carla bore last season, and I think they are older than five at the time. But
we need somebody with you know, like a diagram and like pieces of red yarn going from from point to point to figure out this timeline.
But
it's not going to be me.
Yeah, no, not at all. Yeah. Again, getting back to how Ludd is bad at baseball, you know, he mentioned that he actually got a hit. He hit the ball, but he didn't know which way to run. And Cliff, back in the bar, Cliff and Norm are overhearing this, and Cliff thinks that it's sad that kids like Ludd will never fit in and they will be ostracized from society as grown-ups. And Norm asks, is that because they end up boring everybody with useless statistics? Cliff is like, yeah, 63% of them lead lives of quiet desperation.
Yeah, the real punchline is what Norm says next. Say, what about the people sitting next to them?
And then Frasier kneels down by Ludd and gives him words of encouragement and tries to keep it, bring his spirits up. And Ludd points out that Frasier is kneeling on gum. Frasier freaks out about that, and Ludd says that they can change his pants on the way to the opera. And Ludd asks, which opera? And Ludd tells him it's Der Meistersinger, which I looked up is like the longest commonly performed opera. It's like 4.5 hours. And I don't even know if that includes intermissions and like act breaks or anything like that.
Wow.
But Ludd knows this opera, and he describes it as where all the great singers get together in Nuremberg to compete to see who's the best. And Sam is like, oh yeah, kind of like Star Search. And the kid is like, yeah, basically kind of rolling his eyes. And this is where Lilith suggests that they take Ludd to the opera with them, but he has to ask his mom's permission, so Ludd tells Carla that they invited him to the opera, and Carla's like, you don't have to be polite, just tell them to bug off. And this is where, you know, Lilith kind of confides in Carla that, you know, spending time with Ludd will help Frasier and Lilith formulate the answer if they want to have kids of their own. If they want to reproduce or something is the word that she uses, and Carla's like, how long does it take for one of your pods to hatch anyway? As the trio are leaving, the Cranes and Ludd, Cliff actually mentions that Wagner wrote all of those operas when he was deaf, and Frasier corrects him. He's like, no, that was Beethoven. And Cliff says, oh yeah, I meant blind. And Lilith's like, no, that was Milton. And Cliff says, right. He had warts. Carla's like, no, that was you. It's an okay exchange. It's not like the funniest gag or anything, but I just think it was funny that Cliff was actually right that Wagner wrote the opera in question, Der Meistersinger, that they're talking about. So, usually Cliff's little insane trivia or whatever is a little bit off the mark, but this time, well, he got the right composer.
And at least he was in the sequence.
Yeah.
Wagner, Beethoven, Milton, Cliff, Clavin, you know? Man, it's a small victory.
Yeah. Then it is hours later, and Carla is anxious that they haven't returned. She, and again, I mentioned this is a 4.5 hour show, but she's like, "How long could an opera last?" And Sam says, "The last one he was in lasted 8 months," which, even though they don't mention her by name, I take as a subtle dig at Diane. And
she was always taking him to those things.
Of course.
So it works two ways.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I felt like we kept going to the opera, but it never ended, and it all seemed like a blur and all the same thing.
Yeah.
The 8-month relationship was an but also, you know, the relationship was operatic. You know, the feeling of it was operatic, and for us as much as for them, I guess. So it's a good subtle joke.
Yeah. And Norma's like, you know, I know that you love your kids. And Carla gives him a look. He's like, I mean, you like your kids. And Carla still gives him a look. I know you have kids, but I've never seen you this concerned. And this is where Carla describes how she loves Lud because he's the good one. He's the one that might actually grow up and achieve something that the family can be proud of. But not only that, he's the one who legitimately cares about her well-being when she's had a rough day. He, you know, like gives her like a hot bath for her feet or something like that and asks her how she's doing. Like they actually have this nice little rapport that it, up until this point, it's kind of hard to imagine Carla having that with Anthony or Anne Marie or her other kids that we've seen. But this is like a nice little thing. And again, this will pay dividends later in the episode when we see that, yeah, Carla, despite the reputation and everything that we know about her family, Carla is a good mom. The fact that she has gotten her kids this far along under her circumstances, so.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is the moment where, you know, like she has to admit that she loves him as if this is shameful. And it comes from Norm. You know, Norm says, well, of course you love your kids. It's normal. You know, it's like, well, don't shout it out to everyone. But I love that this is a moment between those two, because as I said earlier, his punching bag is Vera.
Mm-hmm.
It's his marriage.
Right.
And every time we get a peek into the real thing, you know, we realize he's kidding.
Yeah.
It's just his persona, and her persona is hating your kids. So the fact that like he brings it up is like, you're just as bad, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Back to the C plot, as described, Rebecca comes out of the office whistling, and the gang says they forgot how much girls who get out of Sam's car like to whistle, and she immediately just throws her arms up in a huff and walks back from the office. So they needed Kirstie Alley to do something in this episode. And Sam, again, is laughing at Woody's request, and he still won't loan him his car. Like, Woody's like, no, but I'm starting to love that man's laugh. And he says that he'll give Kelly a ride, Sam says that, hey, I'll give Kelly a ride in the car myself. And Woody's like, no way. Every girl who goes for a ride in Sam's car goes to bed with him. Isn't that right, Miss Howe? And she spins around again.
And I like that final punchline for the C plot,
yeah,
because it's not meant in the same way that the barflies mean it.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like the barflies are trolling her hard.
Yeah. And Woody's just asking for confirmation,
yeah,
but it comes across that way.
Right. He doesn't think that she did it.
Right.
Just that, right, Miss Howe, like all these girls like do that, but he's not including her in that, I don't think. Woody is too guileless for that. So,
right.
But she reacts the same way, like, God,
right.
Woody, you know, and yeah, back into the office.
Yeah. Or he's heard their teasing and just taken it on the face of it as bold.
Maybe face value, yeah, maybe. Yeah, and he doesn't think it bothers her, except,
yeah.
I mean, it's pretty obvious.
So then Woody kind of accidentally guilts Sam into getting the car keys, just by like playing just how much he loves Sam and he just wants what's best and he'll do whatever. And Sam just like kind of frustratingly gives up the car keys out of guilt. And Woody's like, what just happened? And Cliff is like, you outsmarted him. And Woody's like, wow, so that's what that feels like.
Although I think Sam outsmarted himself, like I said earlier.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's like Woody's not doing anything. It's like, oh, man, you're scum.
Yeah.
Trying to, you know, play on my feelings. This was like, huh? It's there. You get the keys.
Yeah.
You know, but then, as we'll see, it's like he's going to chaperone that car.
Right. And at this point, like again, speaking of like wacky timelines and events with like the ages and everything, but this just like, what? How can they do this all in a day? The Cranes and Lud come back from the opera, and Lud says that it was the best day of his life. They immediately ask if they can take him to a movie that same night, and then have the sleepover, brunch the following morning, and then see Peter and the Wolf and stuff like that. It's like, you just got back from a 4-hour opera with the kid, and now you want to take him to a movie? Like, couldn't we have set this up for the next day?
And the movie is like this tone poem. Kayanaskatsi, you know, it's like this tone poem about the clash between technology and nature. I mean, I haven't even seen it. You know, it's almost too pretentious for me. So
well,
that's saying
future
something.
Episode of Cisco and Cinema, you better cover it.
Somehow. Is it time travel? Is Kurt Russell in it?
We'll see.
I mean, if you were Sam and this was Diane were bringing you to all these things, that's basically their relationship, what their relationship was.
Right.
But Ludlow likes it.
And Carla signs off on it kind of reluctantly just because she knows that this is something that Lud really, really wants. He begs her and she's like, okay. And she sees her kid walk away with another set of parents and she kind of turns to them and mournfully says, that's it. I've lost my baby.
She has the feeling that like he's a better match for him.
Yeah.
That they can give him something that she can't, but also she will rebel against, you know, well, I think she, like in the next sequences, she's going to try to play that game.
Yeah,
you know, so
she's fighting back a little bit. She's trying to, because when we come back now, she's got headphones on and she's listening to an opera. And Norman Cliff are talking about this, but the fact that she can't hear them as they're talking. So Cliff, thinking that she's deaf to him, he takes this opportunity to compare her to a troll doll. After which she whacks him in the arm with her drink tray. He's like, I thought you couldn't hear me. She's like, no, but I can see you. So it's like she just whacked him because she didn't like him. And then she kind of explains, since the crane started spending so much time with Lud and introducing him to all these cultural things, she doesn't spend time with him or have anything in common, so she's trying to learn about opera, and she's reading books on the subject and stuff like that, and she's like going through all these books, and one of them happens to be the novel Hollywood Wives by Jackie Collins, because she says she's trying to get into literature, and Sam's like, I've read this.
And she's got like an open mouth reaction to it. It's like Sam, you read more than I think you thought you would, you know, right? Like they have this exchange where like, I'm stupid. No, you know,
I'm sure
you're not stupid, but that's, you only think that because you're stupid. It's like, well, you wouldn't know that about me if you were stupid. Oh, okay. You know, so they're being stupid, but at the same time, like he's read a book.
And if I could,
that's shocking.
If I could write my own little backstory for this, I think this would have gone back to when he was with Diane, and she probably took him to a cute little hole in the wall antique bookstore or something like that, or like, you know, some kind of bookstore in Boston. And I bet he would have picked that up, thinking it's some kind of instructional manual or something like that.
I mean, I think it's fairly smutty, you know. It's like Jackie Collins.
Yeah.
It's
Jackie Collins.
Yeah. So
late '80s, early.
Yeah, he got through it. Yeah. He read it. He got through it.
Then the cranes come in, and they love spending time with Lud because he's a great child. Frasier says he's bright, inquisitive, creative. He reminds Frasier of a young Frasier. And again, like it's been like a week of this, and they want to take Lud to dinner that night. And Carla's like, look, you got to give me some time with my kid. She had this whole family night planned for them, which is nice. She's like, she was going to make a big bowl of pasta. And the family was going to sit around the TV watching America's Most Wanted and see if they can rat out their neighbors, which is the nice little thing to that. Because, of course, the family night would be food and sitting in front of the TV and not just, you know, watching one of the more popular shows of the era, America's Most Wanted, but also for the Tortellis, the fun would be trying to call the cops on their neighbors.
Yeah. Of course.
But Frasier says he's got reservations at the most exclusive restaurant in Boston. And Cliff is like, I've never heard of this place. And Frasier's like, precisely.
Right. So, Magritte's.
So
this is not a restaurant. This is kind of a weird art joke in there, you know, somewhere.
Yeah. And Carla, she's like, fine, just take him. And she can't hide her disappointment. And Sam doesn't have a whole lot to do in this episode, but this is one of those things that we love about Sam is Sam knows people, and he's good at playing peacemaker and kind of resolving some of these things. So Sam has the instinct of going to Frasier. He's like, hey, why don't you invite Carla along with them? So she's not feeling like you're taking her kid away. She's still part of this. And Frasier, I might be tipping off my home run, but like Frasier's like, Carla's a fine woman and a dear friend. Actually, she's neither of those things. Why would I want to eat with her?
Yeah, and it has to be Lilith who, like, digs her nails into his hands until he accepts. I think one of the core ironies of Frasier is that he's a psychiatrist, but he doesn't understand people.
Yes.
Right? Like, he's socially stunted. And Lilith, despite her very cold demeanor and, like, robotic delivery, understands people better. I think she's the better psychologist.
Yeah, I'm sure, yes. Yeah.
Well, she needs her own radio show. But they will invite Carla, finally. Which I think leads to the best sequence in the episode.
Yeah, yeah. But just before we get there, you know, Frasier does say, like Carla, when he invites her, he kind of does his best to warn her that it's a very posh restaurant without trying to be, you know, too insensitive and get into any specifics. But she's like, no, I get the picture. I'll shave my legs. But then when we get to the restaurant, Carla, she, for one thing, her hair is pulled back really tight, like almost as tight as the way Lilith typically has her hair in the show. And it's kind of like Carla is dressing the way she thinks this is the way you would present yourself at this type of thing. So she has her hair pulled back, but she's also wearing like a suit jacket and a big tie.
She doesn't have the clothes for this. Yes. So she went into Eddie's closet, you know, type thing. You know, she grabs some male clothes to make this work. Yeah. And she sort of comes in as like a little Victorian gentleman.
Right. And clearly showing that she's out of her element, but she's doing her best. She keeps overusing the word delightful to describe the food, the decor, the art on the walls, the ambiance, the general everything like that. Everything is delightful. And she tries to identify a painting as a Schnabel. And Frasier's like, no, it's not. And even if it were, it would be pronounced Schnabel, which leads Carla to making a joke about the pronunciation of table as Tobble, which makes Lud crack up. And that's a nice, cute little moment that she's able to throw that back and get her son to laugh. But Frasier doesn't like that part, because this is like the first time where we see, okay, we're actually seeing what Frasier might actually be like in this situation. Because Frasier tells Ludlow,
cracks are showing.
Yeah. They're not there to have fun. They're there to enjoy themselves. and he says that he'll order for the table, and he says that, well, how does he say, Lilith's delicate constitution is not amenable to shallots or something like that. So he asks if there's anything they can't eat, and Carla says, no heavy barbecue sauce. She'll be repeating like a howitzer.
Which is half and half street talk and like this eloquent Carla that we're getting in this scene, you know, repeating.
Yeah, it's actually a nice turn of phrase. Yeah,
right. Like the food she's talking about, the barbecue sauce is does not fit this restaurant, but also, you know, and like the sentiment is street, but repeating. Yeah. It's very eloquent, so yeah. I like this Carla. I like this Carla a lot.
It's fun. It's fun. But we do cut away from the dinner for one moment to see the culmination of the B-plot, where Woody is finally in Sam's car, and Kelly, played by Jackie Swanson, of course, is in the passenger seat with him. And he's driving along with Sam's car, and he mentions that he's getting tired and he wants to pull over and they can just look at the stars. She's like, yeah, that's a good idea. So he shouts out the window over his shoulder, Sam, where's a good place to park around here? And we just hear Sam shouting back from another car, yeah, take the next right or something. He's like, and don't drive so fast or something, like cautioning him about that. So, yeah, Sam would loan him his car, but he had to chaperone them and watch from a distance.
Right. It keeps the Kelly story alive, yeah, I guess.
It does.
Mostly the value of this scene.
Right, exactly. Even though she is only on screen for 30 seconds total, and she has one line of dialogue. But it's still nice to see her. Back to Marguerite's, Frasier is overly flattering of the salad course to the waiter who doesn't care. And again, this is one of those things with Frasier and his pomp and just like, so, like, yeah, he doesn't get the people. He doesn't understand the room of who he's talking to, but He ordered the bouillabaisse for the table, and he's telling them to take in the smell and savor the flavors, and he's giving all of these things, and Lilith has to cut him off. She says, "As usual, your anticipation is getting in the way of my enjoyment." When she first says that line, my question, I was like, is she making, is that like a sexual entendre? Is like she making like a joke, like in that case, like that's what I was thinking she might be doing. But then Carla...
I think it's everything. Well, I think it's everything in their lives, right?
Yeah, well, but then Carla makes that point, because she says, she makes it one, because she says, yeah, Eddie has that same problem too. And Lilith's reaction to the way Carla says it seems more of a little bit like surprise, like, oh, that's not what I meant. But, so I'm not sure about that, but yeah, it could be.
Yeah. I mean, she and Carla have shared sexual secrets before.
Right.
That's a weird, yeah, that's a weird friendship.
Yeah. And Ludd won't try it. He doesn't like fish. And Fraser criticizes that this isn't something that comes out of a can in the cupboard with mermaid on it. And he's like, this is, he calls it fruit-a-mer.
Yeah. Fruit-a-mer, which is one of the most hilarious things in the episode because, yeah. I mean, I've never heard it. I mean, I've heard it all the time because fruit-a-mer is, that's a French word, you know. And I can understand that, you know, the like seafood is such a barbaric way to say it.
Right.
It couldn't be like there's land food and there's seafood. You know, if you called every land animal land food and then seafood, it's just like a dumb, it's just a dumb word.
Yeah.
It's like very, very simple. And fruit de mer is fruit from the sea. And that's what we call seafood in French. So that he would like convert it to French. Whenever Fraser talks in French, I'm always tickled, not just because it's my language, but because it's all so pretentious. And he uses it like in places where other people wouldn't.
Yeah.
It's not déjà vu or, you know, like words that are part of the normal like, vocabulary.
Yeah.
This is fruit de mer, as is somehow fish soup is different if you call it that, you know?
Yeah.
I love that bit.
And he also, he mentions, you know, this costs $32 a pop, so the boy should try it. And again, kind of like losing his temper a little bit. Carla, you know, kind of encourages Ludd. She's like, look, just try it to make Fraser happy, and if you don't like it, you can spit it out in the napkin, like I did. And she kind of holds up her napkin.
See?
Yeah. And Fraser kind of just still getting under his skin, and he's like, they're not there to be happy. They're there for cultural enrichment, which is Fraser's province. And now you're like, all right, I'm not liking this Fraser. I really and like, but we're like, yeah, we at this point, we know enough. This is all intended to come back in his face. That's what this does. Like, we love seeing the class distinction and like the contrast of the normal people at the bar, the regulars like Norman Cliff and Sam and Woody, with people like Fraser and Diane, and to an extent Rebecca as well. And we also love it when the higher class people are laid low, which they are so often. So just hold on, keep watching. Ludd tries it and hates it. And Fraser's like, you barely touched the broth. He's like, take another bite. And Ludd shouts that he wants a hamburger and like crawls under the table, making a scene. And like, and Fraser has to look at the people at the other table. He's like, what an imp. And here Carla is going to get Ludd out of the table. And this is where it's like, okay, Fraser crossed the line because he stops her. He's saying that he taught a course on developmental psychology, and as you know, he knows how to raise the child seeking attention. The best thing to do is just ignore the lad. So Fraser starts to tell them about the chef's background, where he was educated. He was the apprentice of somebody, but he keeps getting cut off because Lil's like, what's that smell? It smells like something is burning. And we hear Fraser saying the child is burning his shoe. And he's getting a little bit more uncomfortable and more uncomfortable and more uncomfortable. And then he's like, okay, burning one shoe was just a funny little prank. But now he starts to burn the other shoe. And Fraser gets mad and he starts shouting at the boy through the table, saying something like, the relationship is severed or something like that. And everyone in the restaurant is staring at them. And Lilith goes, Fraser, everyone thinks you're shouting at your clams.
That's what it looks like.
And the waiter and the maitre d' come to check on the table. And they're like, we can offer you a table in the kitchen. It's like this. And Lilith, again, playing the better understanding part is like the boy's mother was about to get him out, kind of knowing that, okay, we're not the kid's parents. We have overstepped this a little bit. The boy's mother was going to take him out there. And Carla has to throw it back at Frasier. She's like, I'm not sure if I'm qualified. I've never taken a psychology class. And making Frasier say the words. And he does. He says, please, please do this. And Carla can get him out of there. She's like, hey, come on, it's hamburger time. And they get out of there and they go, they get their jackets. And just before leaving, she asks, like, the maitre d' if he has frog legs. And like, yeah, we do. And she goes, yeah, wear nice pants and nobody will notice. And she makes her son crack up and he says that she's the best mommy. And it's a victory for Carla. And they high five and walk out together. It's a wonderful little moment for mother and son. And this is where
look, my fancy restaurant PTSD involves both myself eating frog legs, which I liked as a kid, I guess.
Yeah.
So you can tell the kind of restaurant. And my brother making a scene because he wouldn't eat the slab of tuna, which did not look like a tuna sandwich from home. You know, it was like a tuna steak.
Yeah.
That he barely picked at and then, you know, still chose a dessert from the tray or something. And yeah. It caused the whole thing. You know, there was much punishment. Right. But so the fish and it's all, you know, it all came back to me. Pretty crystal clear in this episode.
And in the aftermath, you know, Frasier and Lilith are left there alone, and Frasier says that he learned a lesson. He's like, I learned a lesson, and I'll share it with you before you coat my feet, my blistered feet in butter, and drop me off at the emergency room.
That is, did people think in 91 that was still okay to put butter on burns? I think it's funnier. It's funnier than like cold water or whatever. But you're supposed to be a doctor here of a kind.
This is where he said, you know, his instincts were right. Yeah. He shouldn't be a father. He doesn't want to be a father. And he kind of resigned. I'll never be a father. And there's a moment of hesitation where Lilith is sort of like, should I say it? Should I tell him or not? And like, I just, like, if we can go really, like, Galaxy Brain, it's like, is she having a moment where she's like, should I end this? Should I terminate this? But then she's like, no. She's like, she's like, this is how he'll respond. And she's like, Frasier, I'm pregnant. And he gets excited. His eyes go by. He's like, I'm going to be a daddy? And it's like, as it goes to black, he's like, we must come to this restaurant more often.
They don't want you there, I'm pretty sure. They don't. There was some let's just say that this is the most exclusive place in town, and they finally got a reservation, and it's like they're probably low on the totem pole in terms of of, you know, honored guests, because like the waiter is very over it. Right. With him, it's like, I don't care if you like the food or not, because you're probably insignificant to me, given who else is in our clientele, right? And the maitre d', you know, is quick to offer them a table out of the way,
right?
You know, and he's a fairly severe fellow. He's played a Klingon on Star Trek.
Yes,
just the type of person.
Yeah, the maitre d' was played by the actor Peter Henry Schroeder, who had a handful of appearances, and including the movie Argo. But yeah, he played the Klingon Chancellor in two episodes of Enterprise. Yeah.
So not the most remembered one, but, you know, he's got that kind of face. So it's not like the restaurant isn't necessarily welcoming.
Yeah. And I actually, for a moment, I had to see if it was I knew it wasn't the same restaurant, but I wondered if it was the same set, as there was an episode in season 5, I think, Young Dr. Weinstein, where there was like an exclusive restaurant.
It looked familiar.
That they had, like, Diane was trying to get seats to, and Sam ended up getting her table because he lied about his identity.
Yeah.
It's not the exact same set. Like, it might have been just redressed, but if it was that long between seasons, I think they might have just, like, scrapped the set.
Right, it's probably just, whole, but, you know, just walls.
Yeah.
But it had the same layout with where the exit was. And
yes, yeah, exactly.
Didn't
yeah.
it? I don't know. Or maybe I'm just flipping them in my mind. Maybe it's the opposite.
The entrance and exit was in the same side of the screen, like the right side of the screen as you're facing it, okay, with what appeared to be a kitchen door in the back or something, or maybe it was bathrooms or something like that. So,
because I tend to flip memories. Yeah. I do that a lot. It's like when I think about Who's Who, the comic book.
Oh, yeah. You know?
Like in my head, the right-hand entries are on the left and the left-hand entries are on the right. And I don't know why my brain does this, but so I wasn't too sure. But yeah, I guess you confirm it. Okay.
Yeah. The last thing to mention was Ludlow is played by the actor Jarrett Lennon, who did have quite a handful of TV credits as a kid, less so as an adult, which is the case for, right. I think, 90% of child actors do not.
Right. So he did it until he was a teenager, yeah, and then went on to do other things. But he's still, I mean, like his last credit is in 2023. So sometimes he comes in and does a little job, but it's a sideline, right, not a mainline. But when he was a kid, it's like, he got a lot of kudos for being very natural, and so he appeared in a lot of things. For nerds, we can mention roles in Quantum Leap and Lois and Clark, Freaks and Geeks as a teenager. So, you know, he did pretty well.
Yeah.
And he's good here. I think he's fine here.
Yeah, he's fine. Yeah. A nice episode for Carla and a good win for her, and a nice episode for Frasier, seeing how he's, you know, I think he said hoisted by his own petard. Also, a significant moment, at least in the history of these characters in the show, is that now we have somebody other than Carla who is pregnant, and we're going to get another childbirth in the future of the show, as Lilith is now with child. So.
Right, and they've shown that there's like comedy potential in these two as parents.
Right, right, and I think like at this point, like they're the show is invested enough as with them as a couple that we're going to give them the subplot and everything, which is really cool. So because they know that Frasier and Lilith are magnificent together. So for Norm's tab, Norm had 4 beers this episode, which brings him up to 646 for the series. Who is your employee of the week?
Well, obviously the kid is quite good in this, but for me it's Carla. I think she gets to show many different colors. Mm-hmm. I like that she's like validated as a single mother.
Yep.
And that she can connect with, obviously she can connect with the Anthonys of this world, you know, like the bad apples, but she can connect also with the kid who is the black sheep of the family, mm-hmm, you know, the kid who is completely different from the rest, and she still makes an effort. Like there's parts of her in him, like, you know, like she does say something like, you know, there's, you know, part of it, her DNA is in him as well, because he likes the same kind of jokes and so on. So so to me, this is Carla who shines through, even though maybe the big foil is Frasier. I think it's Carla for me.
And I was kind of waffling between the two of them. For the same reasons that you mentioned, Carla, I was like, yeah, those are all good things. And just I'll split the difference here, and I'll say Frasier, mostly for just his acting when Ludd is under the table, just Kelsey Grammer's performance and how he's trying to seem so unconcerned and natural while he's obviously in severe pain, and when he ends up exploding and shouting down at what appears to be his bowl of soup. So yeah, great performance from both of them. Great, very different aspects of both of them, but I like them. You say Carla, I'll say Frasier, just so we can split it. For the home runs, my runner up is Frasier's line when he's like, "Carla's a fine woman and a dear friend. Actually, she's neither, and why would I want to eat with her?" I like that one a lot. But like, just as a moment, it's just the reveal that Lilith is pregnant at the very end, just because that will be a significant moment in the life of the show. So,
all right. One of my home run moment is, I think, a very real. I love it when Cheers is like, the jokes are real. The people react in real time to real jokes and things that, you know, it's things that people might say. It doesn't feel scripted in the same way that other shows might. And it's the whole Schnabel Tabble debacle.
Yeah.
I felt like she was like he corrects her, but she turns it into a joke. And so she needs to be like Carla is like she has to be witty because she has to improvise that moment.
Yeah.
And it's a, like a silly pun, which is part of my entourage. Was people talk like this all the time, you know, that kind of wordplay. And it surprised me. So I'm going to give it to that tiny little moment.
Nice. That's a good one. Yeah. All right. Well, Cisco, thank you again for coming back on the show and thank you for helping me cover this episode. Where else can people find you on the network or if they want to hear or see more from you in the podcastosphere?
In the podcastosphere, I'm on the Fire and Water Network, just like you are. And every Tuesday I come out with a show which about pop culture elements. Together we do every 4 months we do a Fire and Water team up. We cover like a team-up series, and in our case, Marvel 2-in-1 with The Thing. So that's coming up like next month, I guess. Plus, there's a movie show that you mentioned a couple of times, Ciscoid Cinema, which has various sub-shows in it. That's just starting. Plus, Oh Hot More Not, which is the me and the Hot Squad looking at Marvel Universe Deluxe and Who's Who now, and dissecting each entry. And so far as... I mean, that, we call it dissection, but it's like, is this character dateable? So this is some of the content that I provide every week on the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
And it's good stuff. Good stuff. Thanks again. And thanks to all of you out there who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FW podcasts to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
Oh, Lud. One Hotfoot. Might be considered a puckish prick. But if you light that other match, it is the end of our tutelage. Is that perfectly clear? That's it. That's it. I've had it. That severs the relationship.
Fraser, everyone thinks you're arguing with your clams.